Greetings, dear listener, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And joining me here in the muggy north, if you don't know what muggy means, look it up on the internet. Joining me is Alex Davis.
Hello.
And Mr. Matthew Shaw.
Hello.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's show. We might be joined by Aaron. We're not sure. We're just trying to track him down. He's gone on lunch somewhere. And
What's happened here is, long story short, Aaron, as you will all remember, quite ridiculously said Halifax were in a relegation battle last week. And now that he's rightfully, I should add, being ripped to shreds by everyone as a result of it. I took great pleasure in telling him that after my visit to the Shay on Sunday. It's quite good, actually, because a lot of people knew that it had run a relegation battle.
It's travelled?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
And I don't think...
Listeners. Excellent.
I duly ripped him to shreds. So I think he just doesn't want it to happen on the podcast, which is fair enough.
Well, Alex, banter has consequences, doesn't it, really? Like, people need to understand
now,
that.
People, this is fair. No one will deny this in this office.
Yep.
Aaron is probably the best at giving it out in the office.
Yeah.
Is absolutely the worst at taking it.
Well,
you can't give it.
But he's awful at taking any sort of banter.
You can't give it. You can't say anything about Bradford. Is it Bradford he supports?
Oh, I don't know.
Obviously, Aaron, everyone is entitled to a right to reply. So please get in touch and let us know what you think about this week's show.
I hope you're watching halfway through the show.
Yeah, and we won't tell him about anything that happened in this opening gambit. But anyway, also coming up on this week's show, we've got a good and accurate fixture preview for Super League Championship and League One. We're also going to be joined by Jamaica head coach Jermaine Coleman, who'll be talking about that autumn international at Headingley against the England Knights. But before all of that... And I was a big fan of Trans World Sport back in the day and Kabaddi. Channel 4, Matthew. Channel 4, you've created a bit of a stir this week with that little snippet on page 2 of League Express. How excited should we all be? Or is it not? Is it too early to say?
I don't want everyone to get carried away. And one thing that I found in this job is, no matter what you write, and let's just, for clarity, I said the AFL have had discussions with, which is true. But people read that and think, oh, it's done. When's it on? It'll be on next week. And then if it doesn't come off, I've no reason to think it won't come off. I've no reason to think this is a done deal either. People are like, ah, you said it would go to Channel 4. No, I didn't. I think we can be cautiously very excited, but there has to be a bit of caution. There's nothing signed off, there's nothing sealed, there's nothing delivered.
Well, yeah, Matt's right. Matt has only said they've expressed an interest.
That's all I've said. There have been some discussions held. It's very exciting. They're not the only ones as well, which is good. I don't want people at Sky thinking that everyone suddenly thinks that they're worthless. That's absolutely not the case. But it is exciting. You know, the thought that it could be on free to air. I don't even know what sort of package they're looking at. Are they looking to show a live game every week? I don't know. Are they looking at a highlight show? I don't know.
Even if it's something like their coverage of American football in the early 90s or Football Italia, even if it's something
like
that.
If it's like a magazine show.
Yeah, exactly.
That, you know, they might have one game a week. They go to the club. They do a bit of a... Because what Channel 4 do really, really well at the minute are some of the documentaries. And, you know, like all the educating Yorkshire, they've all been great. Secret Life of yada yada, they're all great. Might be something like that where you go a bit more in depth, things that we don't normally see. They might do a feature game every week and then highlights on the back. I have no idea.
Well, Channel 4 do things that are a little bit off the cuff, bit different.
Yeah.
And Rugby League fits into that category, to be honest. We've all seen over the last week what free to air coverage of a sport can do.
Yeah. The other thing as well, the other suggestion, Phil Kaplan brought this up on Backchat. Remember Rugby League Raw? Whether it be something like that. Now, I loved Rugby League Raw. Watching it back now, I don't think it fits in the modern world. I think it did push the northern stereotypes in your face a little bit. I think it would have to be a little bit more polished than that. But the same concept, just a bit more PC, I guess.
I think that's the thing you have to realise is when you're on Channel 4 or BBC or whatever, you're broadcasting to the nation. I know Sky, you're doing it as well, but with Channel 4, you're going to get more casual viewers. So it needs to be aimed at everybody.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm aware that I made a reference to something that was going on in the early 90s with two people who probably weren't even born.
No, I vaguely remember Trans World Sport. It was at Sunday morning, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember, just before
Little House on the Prairie.
And there seemed to remember sailing being on there.
I'm just going to throw this out there. James Richardson on Football Italia used to sit out on a balcony somewhere in Rome or Milan with a cake there, and that was the thing. You, Matthew, presenting it somewhere in an arcade in Leeds. You know,
get me outside Dan Fleming's cake shop in a piece.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be that far away from a cake, man.
Honestly, right, so
there we go.
It's Rugby League World Production
if he,
Week.
If he could do back
careful
chat.
What you say.
If he could do back chat with a cake, he'd definitely jump on board with that.
Right, so we'll keep an eye on that. TotalRL.com, the place to go if any breaking news happens in the world of broadcasting and that kind of thing. But some other news which we should be covering, and that's breaking news, I think, today, and that's the announcement that reserve grade is back.
Hurrah.
Big time. There's still a question mark over five other applicants outside of Super League. Yeah. I think we all know who they are because they've been the torchbearers of reserve grade for a long time, like Keith Lee and Halifax and the like. Yeah. But this is good. This is good news, Alex.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, every player you talk to pretty much says, "Oh, the reserves was when it was good." And Brad Dwyer in his Q&A for the mag. Said the same. He was one of the last that came through the mandatory reserve grade, and he was a big fan of it, and pretty much all the players are.
Is this going to be the end of Jill Reg as a result of this, do you think?
I'm not sure it'll be the end of it. I think the calibre of player that is available will change. I think one of the clubs that will be worried of Feversham, because I can't see the likes of Ashton Goulding, Callum McClelland, that ilk, being available readily week to week, because I think they will play reserve grade. So I think what you'll find is it's the younger players. Will that mean that dual reg won't be as common in the Championship? No, I don't think it will.
Will it force players like Ashton Goulding and the like to look for another club if they're just going to be playing reserves all the time?
For certain players, yes. What's interesting, what will be interesting, is how it affects the clubs like Keighley and Halifax, because with no disrespect to them, take Halifax as an example. So over the years, their big success stories have been Brandon Moore, Elliot Morris, Chester Butler, Nick Rawsthorne. You would think that ilk of player wouldn't be going to Halifax's reserve grade now. You would think it would go to a Super League reserve grade. So what does that mean for them and the impact and the success their reserve grades can have? Because the player pool of, you know, that calibre of player, they've got a hell of a lot more competition now. So that will be interesting, but that's a very small element of a much bigger picture. This is it's fantastic news for the sport that your top clubs running reserve grades will be keeping players in longer. It should give them that extra few years of development. We shouldn't lose as many players.
We did get a bit of a snapshot, didn't we, of how a club might go about putting a reserve team together with Hull FC last year, when they started bringing players like Danny Langtree and Levy Nzungu into the club. Mm. So we've already seen how they'll cope with it. But will it affect League One clubs like Oldham?
I was going to say, I mean, it should filter down all the way to community clubs. And the fact that you're going to have a lot more retention than it's been...
What will be interesting is how it affects the standard of the Championship and League One. Well, I know for a fact, and I'm not going to nick it, I'd be breaking trust, but I know one player at a Championship club who was offered a reserve grade contract at a Super League club, has actually turned it down to stay with the Championship club because he doesn't want to play reserve grade rugby, he wants to play first team. But I think we can expect to see that more and more, that clubs will look at the Championship, look at League One, and look at those players that are between 19 and 23 and go, look, we're going to sign you on a reserve grade contract with the view that you could move up. The issue that the Super League clubs might have is the finances, because there is a bit more money being thrown about the Championship now, and if they're offering, they're not going to be offering huge money to go play reserve grade rugby, they might get more to play first team rugby in the Championship. So I don't know, there'll be certain players it works for, certain players it doesn't. What I think you'll find, though, it will be that those players between the ages of 19 and 21 that predominantly fill the reserve grades that the clubs would otherwise be getting rid of, that they think, you know what, we'll just give them another couple of years and see how they get on. What should happen from that is either, one, they develop and become Super League players, fantastic. The other thing is, they should still develop and will probably help bolster the player pool in the Championship and League One, which filters all the way down. So, for me, it will mean more young people are playing rugby more regularly. That cannot be a bad thing.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep an eye on that as well on TotalRL.com. But let's talk about Super League and some of the matches taking place this weekend. We might as well start off with the Thursday night game. It's a weird weekend this weekend because it feels like a proper schedule in the fact that most of the games happening on Sunday. Can't quite work it out, but anyway.
Isn't it so much better though?
Yes. Why is it taking this show for it to suddenly become an issue? No.
We're claiming credit for that.
Absolutely. Well, it was last week.
It's so much better when you have games on a Sunday. Albeit, I'm going to sound such a hypocrite here. I've been talking a lot since I've come back from Toronto about how you make it an event. I've been speaking to fans about how we can make this happen in the UK. I think I said, going to a Toronto game is a bit like, in this country, going to the races, going to the darts, going to the 2020 cricket. You're not really going just for that. You're going as part of the day. And a lot of fans have said to me, yeah, we agree with you, but you can't do that on a Sunday because I've got work on a Monday. So someone said to me yesterday, Halifax fan, so they have the pub that they're in conjunction with, the old post office. He says, I love going to the old post office, but I never go. I went, well, why? And he went, well, it's on a Sunday. I've got to work in the morning. He said, if we played Friday night, or Saturday afternoon, and I'd be there all the time. And that got me thinking, that's a good point.
Saturday night.
The thing with Sundays is it's a real family day. You can bring your family to the rugby on a Sunday, whereas you might not be able to, certainly won't be able to on Thursday night.
No.
And probably a Friday night as well, because it's late. You can't bring your kids to a game that finishes at 10 o'clock. So Sunday is the family time. That's the advantage of that time.
Could slot. In the summer, though, you play 6 o'clock on a Saturday,
and then you're trying to compete with football. Anyone that's been to the football games can't go to
in the summer, you know, between May, June, July.
Most football matches don't kick off on a Saturday anymore.
I don't know, it got me thinking that if that's the sort of audience we want to attract, it's a fair point. You know, people don't.
We do need to nail down something though, don't we? Because it is all over the place at the moment.
But I'm taking away the whole turnaround thing, which I think is primarily the reason they do it now. If I was wanting to get a younger audience in and I was wanting to make it an event like going to the races, like whatever, is a Sunday the right day? And yeah, I'm not sure it is.
Is turnaround less of a problem now we've got reserve grade coming back? Because you've got strength in depth then, haven't you? And
they'll still, yeah. It won't make any difference to them.
Okay. Well, anyway, Wigan against Wakefield on Thursday. Wakefield 16, Castleford 36. Alex, I might as well come to you for this bit then. Wakefield, iffy spell they're in at the moment. Oh,
definitely. Well,
they don't want to be going to Wigan at this point, do they?
No, absolutely not. Wigan are in fine form and Wakefield aren't. They're looking over the shoulders. I don't think they have anything to worry about, but it doesn't mean that they're not looking. And to be honest, the fans should be a little bit worried, but not too worried, because I think there are too many teams in between them and the drop. But the way they're playing at the moment, because I don't think Castleford were particularly brilliant, and they ended up winning by 20 odd points.
They must have been all right, though.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. But they didn't set the world alight, I don't think. And, of course, Danny Brough had given Wakefield a good lead at half-time and they weren't able to hold on to it.
Dower Powell was waxing lyrical about Danny Brough's kicking.
Yeah, he was. And even Danny Brough can't get them a win at the moment.
I mean, it's 4 points, isn't it? It's a big ask at this stage of the season for Wakefield to be dragged in.
I mean, we'll go on to it. The big game for me is actually Saints London this week. What sort of team are Saints going to put out? Because they rested a load against London last time and lost. Will they do the same again? Could London, and then let's say that Wake, this is all ifs and buts and maybes. If we can beat Wakefield, if London beat Saints, which you'd have to say is still an unlikely combination, although Wigan will be favourites to beat Wakefield, there'd only be 2 points then. And then is it a big ask with 6-7 games left?
As it's been for the last few weeks, the Super League table can change really quickly, moving teams from third to seventh or whatever.
So I am very reluctant to to make any bold predictions about they're fine or they will be in the five or they're going down, because everyone was saying last week on the show, weren't they, that oh, Leeds are all right now. And I'm like, well, lose to OKR, and we're all talking very differently, aren't we? And lo and behold, I'm sure we'll be talking very differently.
They've got some tough fixtures coming up, though, haven't they?
They've got a tough run the next three games, and then they've got the games that will define the season, basically. They've got some winnable games after that.
Well, how are Wigan going to approach this game after that defeat to St Helens, which wasn't on Sally?
Joking aside, though, 17,000 there at St Helens, that's not bad, is it?
No, absolutely not.
But how are Wigan going to react to this?
Well, to be honest, I think most teams will be sweeping defeats against St Helens under the carpet and moving on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Wigan have aspirations of being able to beat Saints by the end of the year. But at the moment, Saints are by far and away the best team. And Wigan can't let that defeat ruin their season. They've got to keep the momentum going that they had before. And I think a home game against Wakefield is probably a pretty good one for them to have.
Well, that's the game on telly. The game on Friday night, which is on telly, Hull KR against Huddersfield, which in the last couple of weeks it's been heading in this direction. It's a mammoth game now, this one, isn't it, for both clubs. Yeah. Hull KR's result against Leeds, I mean, we touched upon it briefly just then, but it was a very, very impressive display, Alex.
Well, absolutely. I think Hull KR, again, one of those teams that we just can't predict. They go to Wigan, get smashed, and the next week they go to Leeds and win fairly comfortably. And it's the same with Huddersfield, I think. Obviously, it was a bit of a tale of two halves, wasn't it, against Catalan.
Tale of 60 minutes against 20 minutes, basically.
And they had a brilliant performance against Salford the week before. So if they play like they did against Salford, I think they'll probably win that game. But that's a big if.
The problem for Hull KR, I've said for a while, I think they'll go down.
I feel like I should balance this out with Aaron.
What I was going to say is they are drastically better when Danny Maguire plays.
I was going to say congratulations to Danny Maguire. 100% appearance in Super League.
Will Danny Maguire play every game that's left this season? I'm not convinced. I mean, I'd be staggered if he doesn't play this weekend, because this is probably the biggest game of the season as it gets nearer to the end, they naturally become that. My fear for them is that if Maguire goes down with an injury, or he's, you know, I think it's clear by the time, you know, he's been staggered in when he's played this time, that there would be a fear for me there. So I think that they will be picking games, and I think you'll be able to tell which games they're picking by when Maguire plays and when Maguire doesn't, to be honest.
What about Huddersfield? And speaking of injuries, they've appointed Steve Blakely, haven't they, as their new physio. And what do we think for Huddersfield? Like we said about the result for Wakefield and the result for Leeds, it's on a knife edge, really. A couple of bad results and suddenly your season's turned upside down. But then again, a couple of wins and it's all forgotten about.
Well, I said they're 2 points in front of London, but in a couple of weeks' time, there could be a couple of points off the playoffs. Who knows? It requires a team to string results together. If you string a couple of wins together, you could be in the playoffs. But if you string a couple of defeats together, then you could be in real trouble. And Huddersfield fall into that category.
I was at the Huddersfield game. Great team in patches. Other times, literally can't do the basic principles of rugby league, namely catch the ball. I don't know what to say about Huddersfield, because it's like click and they're off. It lasts no longer than 20-25 minutes normally. The only time they've put 80 minutes in, either woeful or tremendous, this year was at Magic Weekend when they beat Hull FC. So they've got a young team out, which is admirable, will do them good in the long run, but only on the basis they stay up. If they don't stay up, then it's counterproductive.
I know you said St Helens v London is the one to watch this weekend. Hull KR v Huddersfield's pretty big, isn't it?
But that's
in the grand scheme of things.
But for them too, it's only the game's only really relevant if London start winning games again, isn't it? You know, if London keep losing, they keep getting away with it. So I think what you can safely say is that for Wakefield, who play Thursday night, and Hull KR and Huddersfield, who play Friday night, if Wakefield lose and whoever lose that Hull KR Huddersfield, will be very, very, very nervous about Saints London. They'll be stressing about whether Saints are going to play a weak or a strong team. And I say, from what I can gather, Saints are going to rest a few against London.
Right, let's go to that match then. Sunday's matches, there's no match on Saturday. It's all happening on Sunday. London against St Helens. Let's talk about the second half at Hull for London. If they can put a performance like that in against a changed.
Well, at the same time, they continuously failed to turn up for the first 10, 15, 20 minutes of games. Or
it was
on
an odd
Thursday.
Performance, wasn't it, that first?
It feels like they can only perform when the pressure is off, in terms of games and in terms of it during the actual game. When you're 30-odd points down, the pressure is off and you can play. And it's the same when London started winning some games. The pressure is sort of came off them a little bit and they started to play some good stuff. But now the pressure's back again because they're in with a shout and they seem to be unable to win a game.
I know, you know, Hull fans weren't, understandably so, weren't that too happy with that second-half display. But was it a case of London really...
Well, it were a case
I've never
of
seen
both.
A transformation
it
like
was a
it,
case
really.
Of both. Hull dropped off and London picked up. You know, at this level, for me, and how tight the competition is, if a half is won by 30 or more points, other than Saints excluded, it's because one team has played well and the other hasn't played well. So I think it was a role reversal.
We all know how important momentum is in rugby league. When you get on a roll, it's hard to stop it. And it was the same with Hull and London in the second half. You just can't stop it sometimes.
I think what it emphasised from a Hull perspective is that they're not ready to win a title. Not the grand final. I don't think Hull have improved recently. I don't think Hull have played well three games running for 80 minutes this season. If they're going to win a grand final, they are going to have, wherever they finish in the playoffs, they're going to be in the top five, but you'd think, God, we shouldn't be making predictions this year, should we, like that?
4 points.
But yeah,
four points.
That was a stupid thing to say. But I think they'll be in the five. They will have to play four of the top teams in the league back to back to back and win if they're going to win a grand final. If they're going to do that, they're going to have to play. They're not going to get away with a performance like London where they just don't show up for half a game. Do I think that Hull FC right now are capable of putting three 80-minute performances in back to back to back? No, I don't. Because I haven't seen that from them all season. Could they win the Challenge Cup? Yeah, because it's one-offs.
Isn't the playoffs a one-off?
No, because you've got to do it 3 weeks running.
Yeah, but it's the same.
But you've got to do it 3 weeks running. The Challenge Cup, they only have to play well against Warrington, and then they don't have to play well for 4 weeks.
That's the key.
And then they'll have to, and then they'll have to play well to beat Halifax.
Back in the day, I remember in it.
I mean, we did say there were a couple of months ago, I think, that they are the archetypal cup side.
Yeah, well, I remember back in 2011 when Cass played Leeds in the semi-final of the Challenge Cup, and we turned up really hard and we were 2-0 down at half time and ended up losing on extra time. Then we played Leeds in the Super League the week after and lost by 50 points because we couldn't do it for more than one game at a time.
That's the difference
between the Challenge Cup and the Super League, is you've got to do it this week, then exactly the same next week, and if you don't, you're out. But the Challenge Cup, you've got a couple of months to prepare for that game.
And this is what I'm saying about Hull. If they get to the Grand Final, it's a one-off, but to get to the Grand Final, they've got to play well at least for the 2 weeks before to win those games. And this is why I don't think Hull are capable of winning a Grand Final at this moment in time.
And that's why the Super League always comes out with the best team. Because you've got to do it week in, week out, even at the end.
Can Hull beat Leeds this weekend?
Yeah, of course they can. They can beat anyone in any one given week. But ask me if they were playing, I don't know, Cass, Salford and Wigan.
Thank you.
3 weeks running. Who were three of the top half teams, but not the best teams. Do I think they'd win all three? No, I don't. No, I don't think they would. Because they don't do it, and they wouldn't get away with performances like that against those teams. So that's where my fear is for Hull. In terms of the Challenge Cup, yeah, I think they could win it. Because they could put in a one-off against Warrington, as they're capable of, and then follow it up with a stink of the week after. But that's irrelevant to the Challenge Cup.
Can they beat Halifax in the final, though? These questions are coming your way.
I think you're asking a lot of them there.
Let's finish things off then by talking about London v St Helens. It wasn't a complete shutout for London. Hull did get a drop goal, which I think goes to show you how the direction of travel in that game in that second half. But London against Saints, they have got some tough games coming up.
Yeah,
is it too much to ask them to beat St Helens again this season?
Well,
Alex?
No, it's not.
Well, surely they'll be fancying it. They've done it once; they can do it again.
Look, and the thing is that I say the big question is what sort of team are Saints going to put out? You would think London is a harder game than Halifax, so they'd play a stronger team against London. But if they lose to London, so what? They're still going to win the league. I'm confident enough to say that. That's one thing I'm confident enough to say. They cannot, if they lose a semi-final, it's a disaster. they're not going to lose, but you're still going to do whatever you can. So I think they will rest players this week, and I think it'll be the strongest team out against Halifax, which is absolutely terrifying, but I think that's what they'll do. And if they do that, London have a chance. Well, London have a chance anyway. You know, they've beaten before. I know that they've rest played that time, but it wasn't like it was a youth grade team out, was it? They've got a chance.
Leeds against Hull. Just before we move on to the other couple of games, Leeds against Hull. Leeds, we can't say they were going in one direction, think, and that's up, and then suddenly they get beat, and then all of a sudden the wheels.
I think all I would say on Leeds personally is I didn't get carried away after they beat Catalan. I didn't really get carried away after they beat Cass. I think they played both teams at the right time. I said in the build up to that Catalan's game, if they don't lose that, they are in serious trouble. When you looked at the form Catalan's were in, added to the amount of injuries they had, if they hadn't have won that game, they were in serious trouble. They then went and played Cass and played well. They did play well. But they played a Cass team they never had their halfbacks in, you know? So, again, you'd hope they'd win, and they did. They then played Hull KR, which was, you know, a big game, and they got beat comfortably. Don't think that Leeds have improved as much as people want to think they have. They have improved. They have improved. Don't get me wrong.
The weird thing about Leeds at the moment, because considering we're two-thirds of the way through the season, it's quite a new team.
Yeah.
There's Rob Lewis, Abassia Manafonai, Reece Martin. They've only played a handful of games for Leeds. They've all been slotted straight in and expected to perform immediately. Yeah. And some of them have done, to be fair to them.
Seal Manafonai has done well.
Yeah, by all accounts, Martin and Rob Lewis have slotted in and done well. Mm. But you can't expect, you know, four or five players to be slotted into a team mid-season and for them to just snap into a really good team.
I mean, I thought it was ridiculous when, you know, they beat Cass and people said, well, they're only 4 points off the play. I mean, that was just stupid.
Oh, I was only joking. I wasn't joking, but it was tongue-in-cheek.
No, but you weren't the only one. You weren't the only one who said it, though. Like, for me, they are... none of them are out of the woods yet. You know, Hull KR, I'm still not convinced, because the Maguire thing, Huddersfield, I mean... I've never seen a team shoot themselves in the foot as much as Huddersfield do. None of them are out of the woods.
One thing to mention about Hull FC and Headingley is that they don't win there that often.
They haven't won there for 11 attempts, is it?
So, for them, they'll fancy the chances, but the history is not on their side.
The other thing that works in Leeds' favour this week, again, is the Challenge Cup. We see it with the final. I don't think people pay as much attention when it's a semi-final. The week before and week after, teams playing the Challenge Cup final, they tend to lose. So, could it? I think
Halifax lost eight. Was it eight times?
They lost six on the bounce, didn't
they? Just to let everyone know, Leeds are 6 points from the playoffs.
Oh, for God's sake!
Just two other matches to talk about: Castleford against Warrington. Let's cover that off now. Darryl Powell challenging his team to win all seven remaining matches. Alex, I'll ask. Well, especially with Warrington coming to town on Sunday.
It is a tall ask, but it's possible. I think they can win all seven games if they play how they can play, but then that's a big if.
Yeah, again, this is the thing, and it's similar to what I was saying about Hull. Could individually Cass win all the games? I don't think they're capable of beating Saints right now.
No, probably
but
not.
But I think they could beat everyone else. But have Cass been consistent enough to win seven games on the bounce this season? No, they haven't. Can that change? Of course it can change. But what the evidence that's thrown at you, you would suggest they're not capable of winning seven games on the bounce.
The real positive from the Wakefield game was the move between Rankin and Matautu. Rankin going to fullback and Matautu into the halves, and we saw how good Rankin can be again in the fullback position because he played there against London and beat them comfortably, and played against Wakefield and beat them comfortably. And he kept that quiet
actually, because I've been championing Matautu to move out of fullback for ages, and I've been told I'm wrong.
What I'm saying is Rankin scored some excellent tries against Wakefield, both very similar, jumping up and getting the ball above Ryan Hampshire, and that's what is there.
He's a runner though, isn't he?
He's a good player, and Matautu, I've always said it, is a brilliant defensive fullback.
Yeah, he
whereas
is.
Rankin is probably the opposite. He's a pretty decent attacking fullback, and it's whether Powell wants that stability or to chance his arm a bit and put Rankin there.
Would you put it past Castleford to... Well, I'm asking the wrong person because you obviously want them to be there. But if Castleford did, let's say, stumble into the playoffs, not given the momentum that, say, St Helens have had...
I think if we get into the playoffs, we won't have stumbled there. I think that's the thing.
They're a danger, aren't they, in the playoffs?
Yeah, if they do get there, they'll be on good form because they'll have had to have beaten a few teams to get there. And we always see it in football playoffs, the team that charges up into the playoffs tends to do quite well because they're just in that mindset of winning games. And the team between Cass and Wigan and Catalan that make the two of the three that make that, those spots, they'll probably be in good form and they'll fancy the chances of beating some of the teams.
What about Warrington? I mean, we'll come to Salford in a second. Well,
they've got a bit of a blind spot with Salford.
They have, definitely.
But they've not been particularly impressive for a couple of months now.
Have they had to be? But that's me.
No, they haven't.
But how do you get out of that mindset for the games that really matter?
I think going to Cass is a big enough test to bring it out of them.
I think, look, the reality is they've done the hard work at the start of the season. I mean, they could get caught up and dragged back into it, but they'd have to go on a bad run of form. Are they saving themselves? I think with the way that Warrington have played the last few months, the only way we can prove whether it was not so much planned, but if it was part of a bigger picture, is at the end of the season. But they haven't been great the last 2 months. Even the games they've won on the whole, and I watched them play Wakefield, they were all right, and there were no more. So I'm not.
There's been a couple of key injuries, which is
they've missed Ratchford.
Yeah,
Ratchford's been a massive.
And Hill's
miss.
Been.
It's no coincidence, is it? Really?
I say the last couple of months. That's how long Ratchford's been out. There are some players you don't appreciate how good they are until they're not there. And I think Stefan Ratchford has probably fallen into that category for some players. I think he's a delightful player.
And finally for Sunday, Salford against Catalans, which is a mammoth game for the playoff race. A mammoth game for Catalans. A must win, I think, for Salford, surely.
If Salford lose, I think that will go a long way to consigning them to outside the playoffs. But if they win, they're right in it.
Yeah, looking at the table, it's a must win for Salford because the likelihood is that there'll be 4 points adrift then, which the way this season's going is retrievable but hard. But hard, so it's a massive game for Salford.
And even though Jackson Hastings is on his way, I mean, he put in a very good performance against Warrington.
You don't need to worry about Hastings putting his cue in the rack.
Excellent. Okie dokie. Well, there we go. Those are the matches taking place this weekend. Just a reminder, we'll be joined by Jermaine Coleman in a second. But just before that, a bit of a championship roundup now.
First time I was looking forward to
this. A good second half from Featherstone, but Toronto win again. York stay in second, but only just 1 point now in second place as they drew with Batley. And speaking of draws, when was the last time that happened? They had two draws in the same round.
And of course, there was a draw in the NRL.
Can we just go back and talk about York for a minute?
Of course we can.
How are York second in the league? Right, we talk about pound-for-pound achievements. When you take everything into context, York finishing second would outweigh any accomplishment this season in any competition, maybe barring a Saints treble.
There's a very good interview, by the way, with James Ford, with Gareth Walker in League Express this week, which is a good chat there. But York, I mean, they have got a difficult... Batley was one of the more not comfortable games, isn't the right way of saying it, but a good performance from Batley there for that draw. Swinton drawing at Bradford and having two 16-point leads in that game as well.
I'll tell you what, Swinton are going to be a force next year. They've improved drastically as the season's gone on. You know, they beat Toulouse in Toulouse. They've got a draw against Bradford. They're going to play some of the other top... They didn't get disgraced by Toronto. They've really improved. They've retained the majority of the squad already. Matty Ashton re-signing is a massive one for them. They could be a threat next year, Swinton, on the quiet.
Swinton... Matthew's a bit right here, isn't he? They have turned a corner, it looks like, Alex, and... With everything that's going on off the pitch at that club with regards to marketing and that kind of thing, it's going in the right direction for a grand old name.
From the outside in, when you looked at the Championship this year, you looked at the bottom two as being Rochdale and Swinton. And look at Swinton now, they're absolutely miles away.
I think the general perception, it was going to be two of Rochdale, Swinton, Dewsbury, wasn't it?
Mm.
And maybe Barrow.
So for Swinton to be 13 points ahead of Rochdale...
Only three behind Halifax.
Yeah, it was two last week. More on that in a second.
Yeah.
It's absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Just looking at York's running. Bradford at home.
Yeah.
tough. Barrow away, never easy. Toronto away. Fev at home, then Lee and Halifax away. So they have a tough run in. They have a tough run in. But I don't think they'll drop out of the five.
Can Bradford get in there?
They can, but I don't think they will.
Who's going to keep them out?
Well,
the five that are already there.
The five that are in. I can't see it changing. Well, because Sheffield have a tough run in as well. I think the five that are in now will be... I don't think York will finish second, because I just think naturally they're going to drop some points somewhere.
I think Toulouse will get that back.
Yeah, I do. I think... This is really disrespectful to say, because the table doesn't lie. I think York are the fifth best team out of those five. But they've picked the points up early. Obviously, Fev had a bit of a slow start with a new squad, yeah. Yada, yada, yada. There's no one saying that they will finish fifth. I'd be staggered if they finish second. If they do, you will not find a bigger achievement this year.
They've got a hard run in, but the rewards are there if they win those games, because they're beating the teams around them.
Well, speaking of the teams around them, Bradford this weekend, Toulouse, I think, got Sheffield. So it could... The top five could stretch away from Bradford and Sheffield.
It's a massive... It's a huge game for Bradford. It is a monumentally big game.
It wasn't happy, Johnny, was it?
It's huge for York. If York win, then they put an extra point or more in their bag.
If York win the next two games, if they can beat Bradford and go to Barrow,
they're in, aren't they, then?
They're in, and they don't need to worry about then going to Toronto. You know, they can rest some players, you know, what they want. But I would say that it's a much bigger game for Bradford this weekend. That is a must win for Bradford.
Other games in Championship last weekend: Sheffield beating Dewsbury, a big result that both ends of the table. Lee beat Barrow, and Toulouse triumphed at Rochdale
with six tries from Elias Bergel.
Yeah, and I'm speaking to him. I mean, I'm speaking to him later.
I don't want to take out away. But, I mean, Rochdale are awful, aren't they?
It's not been their best year. Finally, Widnes beat Halifax.
No, they didn't.
Oh, wait. So I've got that the wrong way around, haven't I?
Relegation battle.
Force of habit.
Relegation
battle. So Halifax beating Widnes.
Halifax were good, actually.
Yeah.
They were good.
I shouldn't really say that. I'm speaking to Simon later as well. I should be nice, shouldn't I?
Banter. They played well. Saints will be quaking in their boots when they watch that video.
It's an important win, isn't it, to make sure everything's...
Well...
Because you don't want to go into the phone and the rad.
I think Halifax are going to finish eighth, aren't they? I can't see them catching anyone up unless someone collapses, which constitutes failure.
Even a Challenge Cup semi-final, which everyone will remember.
I'm saying the league constitutes failure.
As a season?
No, probably don't count as failure, because I think the finances... One Halifax official told me that it's worth for making the semi-final in the region of six figures, which will make up for them not making the five. So, in terms of the financial implications, it's not a failure. Mm. But imagine what their response would be. Imagine if we'd have made the five and made the semi final. Then, they'd have been quids in. But you can't have everything.
They could yet make the final, just to say.
Right, I tell you what. Do we know anyone who's willing to say that Halifax will make the final? Anyone at all?
We could go on record if you want, Matthew. I'll hold your hands together. We'll do a Thelma and Louise ending. We could do this.
I think what we're saying is, what I'm trying to say is, if Halifax were to make the final, it would surely have to go down as the biggest shock in Challenge Cup history.
Certainly be up there.
Sheffield beating Wigan. Well, it'd be that level, though, wouldn't it? If Halifax beat Saints, it would be on that level.
I think it would be more impressive, but it wouldn't go down in history.
No, it's a semi-final, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But it'd probably be a bit more impressive, I'd say.
Well, that's the Championship. League One wins for Hunslet, Oldham and Workington Town. Big win for Workington, incidentally, against the Scholars, who haven't won since appearing in an interview in Rugby League World.
Newcastle.
Keighley defeated West Wales. And a big win for Whitehaven, who defeated Doncaster. I think Whitehaven got Team of the Week, I think, in League Express this week.
Newcastle, I'm telling you, they're now a game in hand and three behind. It's a horse race, isn't it? It's like a 3-mile horse race, League One season, and they're into the final few furlongs, and Newcastle Thunder, the whip's been cracked, and they're absolutely flying to the finishing post.
Newcastle playing London Scholars this weekend.
Big game. I mean, they've dropped off, haven't they, the Scholars? A little bit.
And we all know why.
Well, yeah, as you said. I just think I can't see at this stage Newcastle not winning the league. And that's a ridiculous thing to say, because they'll still be a point behind, but they're just flying. And then Mikey Lewis is killing it up there.
I mean, Whitehaven, 3 points clear up at the top, though, we should say. And, you know, if they make, whoever makes the playoffs out of those two, they're not going to be happy being there. And that then takes us back to what we were saying earlier about momentum.
Have Whitehaven got to play Newcastle yet?
Oh, God. Why are you asking me these questions? They played away a couple of weeks ago. I'd be surprised. Anyway,
I still think Hunslet will go up. Maybe that's because of my arrogance, because I tipped him at the start of the year. But they've got a chance, haven't they?
But there's a lot of teams who you could make a case for, because that's how good League One's been this season.
Probably the top five, down to Doncaster.
Anyway, we've been joking about Jermaine Coleman's interview in Rugby League World and how that's affected form. We're going to try and write the balance here on the Total Rugby League show this week, because on Tuesday I caught up with Jermaine Coleman in his guise as the head coach of the Jamaican national side. That's because England Knights will play Jamaica at Headingley in October. And to judge the mood, here's Jermaine Coleman.
Just excitement, really, Ben. I think you know, for all of us involved now, it's a real opportunity for us to showcase ourselves as a group and as a team. And, you know, I've said it before, the effort and the commitment that's gone into this, both on and off the field, from Romeo and Roy and people back on the island, and, you know, from myself and Alex Simmons and Glenn Morrison, Jason Robinson back over here, and then ultimately the players. It's just been a long time in coming, and I think, you know, it's nice to finally get some reward for the efforts that we're putting in, and you know, thank you to England for giving us a game and allowing us to play on this stage. So just a lot of excitement within the group now about the fact that we're going to be having this opportunity, and, you know, it's a challenge, and it's a challenge that we're all very much looking forward to.
It's like you say, it's a challenge. I mean, some of the players in the England Knights squad, very, very impressive with lots of experience, but that's true of the Jamaican side as well, that you could select from.
Yeah, we hope so. You know, we've got some people that have come on board now. Obviously, Michael Lawrence has come on board, and Jordan Turner, and we've had, you know, Ash and Ben Jones-Bishop playing for the last couple of years. And then we've got the likes of, you know, Ross Peltier, that's been playing his trade in the Championship for the last couple of years, but has progressively been getting better and better as the seasons go on. So, you know, we've got quite a lot of experience to call on, and, you know, some of that experience is at a lower level and some of it is at Super League level. But I think it's all for us. It's about the unity that we have within the group, and, you know, that's what we're going to rely on to get us through a lot of games and a lot of tough times. And, you know, I think if you speak to any coach, they would love to have unity over possibly quality. So, you know, we're aware of the challenge that we're facing, and we're aware of the quality that's in the England Knights squad, and you know, more importantly, the team that we'll play will be full of quality from 1-17. But, you know, that's what players want to test themselves on the highest level. And, you know, for us, that's a step in our journey towards the World Cup, and this is a starting point.
And for you personally as well, I mean, a lot of people know you've been the head coach now of the London Scholars for a few years, but you are a Leeds lad, so this must be good as well for you.
Yeah, do you know, that now you've mentioned, I've never coached at Leeds before. I've never coached at Headingley Stadium, so yeah, it'd be a great thing for me to go back to Leeds and you know, be able to represent my heritage back there and be part of the coaching staff going forward with that. So, you know, that'll be nice. And yeah, I've almost probably adopted London and now been down here 15-16 years, but yeah, very much my roots are still back in Leeds, and my heritage is Jamaican. So to go back to Leeds and be able to represent that and be part of that is going to be an amazing opportunity for me, and something I'm very proud of.
And let's talk about that more wider heritage as well. I mean, Leeds has got a very big Jamaican community there. I mean, what crowd are we expecting, and what publicity and promotion and marketing can go into this, do you think, to get a very good Jamaican support there?
I think, as you said, Ben, we've got a massive support base there, really, and we need to really tap into that and tap into the community and get them all on board. And, you know, it's down to us as players and staff to make sure that we make the experience an enjoyable one for everyone involved. And as you said, it is about creating that legacy. It's about understanding that we've got a responsibility to open the door up to the next generation of players that want to come through, and showing them that there is a pathway there to go through to professional sport by playing rugby league and by being Jamaican. So, you know, we have an important role to play there, and, you know, we are looking at doing some promotional stuff. We're looking to, you know, possibly be involved in the carnival and go there on the Sunday and be part of the music festival on the Sunday, and then hopefully possibly have a float on the Monday during the carnival day. So, you know, we're going to do some promotional stuff to try and do that. And I think it's important to us that we get a good following and we get a good backing. Obviously, Yorkshire, West Yorkshire has, as you said, a big population of Jamaican community. So it's important that we entice them all to come, and, you know, it's part of all of our jobs, players, coaching staff, all alike. We've got to make sure that we spread the word and we get the people in there.
And when it comes to, obviously, it's been, how many months has it been since you qualified? It was about November, wasn't it, since you qualified?
It was, yeah.
And in that time, I think you've had one friendly, which was back in Jamaica, so not the full strength side against America. So how difficult is it at the moment being an international head coach where you're trying to, you know, find the right players, get the right systems in place, that, you know, you're having to do this intermittently, and how could that be improved, you think, other than stating the bleeding obvious?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, funding helps. Everything that we do is based around funding, and unfortunately, we are an up-and-coming nation, and you know, we need to prove ourselves on the biggest stage, and that's part of what this opportunity is about by playing England Knights, to make sure that we can demonstrate to potential sponsors, potential people who are interested in being involved, that we are a big team and we've got something to offer rugby league. And, you know, obviously once that happens and we can do that, then funding comes a little bit more freer and things become a little bit easier to try and get everybody together. But as you say, you know, the majority of our squad that are based in England are probably part-time and working full-time and playing rugby on the side. So, you know, it's very difficult at the moment to get some time together. And I think we've had a couple of catch up this year. We had one just in the beginning of June. Obviously, we've got a couple planned in August where we're going to catch up together. And then we'll announce a squad, and then we'll probably have a couple of train-on dates before we go into camp prior to the game. It's difficult. It's difficult to be able to coordinate with everyone's games and everyone's weekends off. Where I might have a weekend off from scholars, it might be that two or three of the blokes are still playing in their teams and they don't have the weekend off. So, you know, it's hard to get sessions in during the week, in particular during the season in particular, because we are all part time. But it's also, you know, part and parcel of the challenge. It's part and parcel of as what brings us together and makes us a closer unit, because we know that we go through all these adversities just to be part and parcel of this team. So, you know, that makes us stronger and bonds us a lot better anyway, I think.
Well, we're not too far off the World Cup now, just not to get you all excited at home and for you too, Jermaine, but we're not too far off. So what's your plans over the next 24 months or so? And also, what's your take on what Jamaica can achieve at the World Cup, do you feel?
Like any competition, Ben, you know, we're realistic and unrealistic. We're going into competition to be the best team that we can be and perform the best way that we can do. And we go in there with intention trying to win games. So, and we'll see where that gets us. I think we're very confident that we can get a couple of wins in and get ourselves through to the quarterfinals. And if we do that and get ourselves automatic qualification, then, you know, as I said, that opens more doors for us going forward. So I think over the next 24 months, there's a big task on hand. You know, myself, Romeo, and Chev as part of the coaching staff, and, you know, Alex and Jason on the board have got a huge job to try and promote and make sure we've got correct funding in place and all the bits in place. So I think, you know, the logistics of organising ourselves for a World Cup with two almost parties working together across the world is, you know, it has its own problems and all dramas with it. But, you know, collectively, we all want to aim for the same thing and we're all working towards the same thing. So, you know, we'll be doing lots of sort of promotional stuff over the next couple of years. We're really hoping that we can get a camp over in Jamaica next year and get the boys across there and make sure we can continue that bonding with the guys that are on the island and potentially going to be part of the group as well. We'd love to get another couple of fixtures in next year, I would think. You know, if we can get some against some home nations and get some, you know, ranking points in there, then that would be fantastic. But yeah, I think at the moment there's lots of ideas and lots of thoughts on where we go and how we pull it together. But I think, if I'm being honest, probably once we get together in October when Romeo and Adrian that come over and Roy come across to England for the game, I think that's when we're probably going to get, you know, majority of our planning done for the next couple of years, when we can sit face to face and have really good conversations.
And finally, Jermaine, how excited are you and all the coaching staff and everyone associated with Jamaica Rugby League about the future for the sport, not just with the heritage players, but back on the island as well?
Oh, massively. I don't think we can put it into words. As I said, I think the biggest thing for us is we feel an unbelievable amount of pressure and pride and opportunity to be able to provide a pathway, as I said, for the next generation of players. And I think, you know, there's pressure that comes with that for ourselves as coaching staff and players, but there's also an excitement that comes with that we can open doorways and we can create pathways for people to open people's life experiences. And again, you know, back on the island, if we can get the game to grow on the island and we can get the support to grow on the island, and then, you know, the plan is that hopefully we can get three or four boys over here at ASAP and get them playing over here in the Championship, in League One, and getting some exposure to some sort of higher level rugby as well. So there's endless ideas of what we want to do, and it's about, you know, pulling all them ideas together and pulling everyone's thoughts and energies together and making sure that we make all these happen. And, you know, the legacy is the important thing. You know, we obviously have to perform on the field in the next 24 months, you know, against England Knights and then come the World Cup. But it's about that legacy that we leave after, and that's going to be the big thing. And I think that's what the one thing that we all want to be remembered by is the legacy that we create now.
Jermaine Coleman there, speaking to me on Tuesday. I've got a funny feeling Jamaica have got a big role to play in Northern Hemisphere Rugby League over the next 5 years or so.
Potentially.
They've got potential, haven't they?
They have potential. That's where it's at the minute. I think this is great. It's a big Jamaican, you know, an Afro-Caribbean community over in England and in West Yorkshire. We need to sell this and shout from the rooftops about it, because there's no doubt that it can have a positive impact in breaking into areas, communities that rugby league isn't used to being in. I hope it's a success, but I've no reason to think it won't be. But we don't have a good track record of doing these things right. So time will tell, but it can only be a good thing.
What do you think as well about the fact that Jamaica, there is a big development going on in Jamaica at the moment? I think the Northwest team played Jamaica A this weekend, just gone. And there is a lot of development going on there. And if it could be tied in with the developments of the sport in North America more generally, then it's good, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. With these things, it's all about, as Matt said, developing the Jamaican places around here, but also back home in the Caribbean as well. It needs to be both. You can't just have a load of heritage players play for Jamaica. It needs to be a bit of both. And we've seen it with other nations as well, like Lebanon. I think they, Lebanon, there's all sorts going on around there. But they do have players that are from Lebanon playing there, despite a lot of the players being Australian. So it needs to be a mixture of both.
Yeah. Absolutely. Speaking of Australia, just before we go, let's touch upon... Let's pick Alex's brain for the NRL. You mentioned a draw, Brisbane against New Zealand Warriors. Mm. A draw in the NRL.
Yeah, the first time in 3 years.
3 years. Yeah. Wow. Huh. Melbourne Storm still top.
Yes, and of course they had Cameron Smith making his 400th NRL appearance, the first time that's ever happened. And they did make a show of it. That's one thing you can say about the NRL, is they do mark these occasions well. They gave all sorts. They gave him a little crystal ball kind of thing, and had his own logo on the pitch and on his shirt as well. So they did make a big song and dance about it, and rightly so.
Where's James Maloney going to be next year, Alex?
If he goes to a Super League club, it'd be a good sign. They're signing the Origin winning halfback.
Will he be in Super League next year, in your opinion?
If he got offered it, I think he'd probably take it.
Who's going to make the playoffs?
Good luck.
Penrith are in eighth, and they're on the charge. I predicted them to come a lot higher than eighth, but they've had a really slow start, but they're really gaining momentum, so I think they'll be in there. And then you've got teams like Cronulla that are just sitting outside, and they've got an unbelievable squad, and they're not even in the top eight.
It's quite frightening. I looked at the league table yesterday, I think, and noticed Cronulla weren't in the top eight, and that is absolutely frightening. The squad that they've got, I have no idea.
And then the Cowboys and the Tigers and the Warriors are all, and the Broncos are still outside the top eight. Goodness only knows who's going to finish in the top.
Good to see Canberra.
Canberra playing really well. Canberra playing really well. Unfortunately, Ryan Sutton isn't playing at the moment. Mm. He's dropped out of the squad. I'm not sure whether it's injury or whether he's just not been picked at the moment. But Josh Hodgson is huge for them. Huge. When he comes back from injury, he makes all the difference.
Anyone stopping Melbourne?
Unfortunately, at the moment, no. No,
it's a St. Helens situation here, isn't it? Really, by the looks of it.
But it is really, to be honest. And they're playing Gold Coast this week.
Oh my god!
Shall we merge the two subjects of St. Helens and the NRL?
Yeah, good segue.
Thank you. Sorry, Alex, for interrupting you, but I wasn't willing to miss the opportunity of that segue that just popped past me. Justin Albert, what's happening?
There's been talk over there that he's been approached by Gold Coast,
and I was told the Bulldogs as well.
And for Holbrook, you're going from Saints, who are untouchable at the top, to Gold Coast, who are pretty much untouchable at the bottom, to be honest. They're comfortably the worst team at the moment. The Bulldogs have won two in a row and jumped above them. And a lot of Warrington fans will be quite surprised to hear that Tyrone Roberts is their best player. And that's about where, and no respect to Tyrone Roberts, but that's about where they are, to be honest. They signed someone from Warrington in the Super League, and he's their best player.
If St Helens want to tie him down, they need to do it quickly, don't they, clearly, because there's
that's what Castleford did with Powell.
I'd be surprised if we don't know what is to come of Justin Holbrook's future before that semi-final.
To be honest, I think it's less down to the clubs that he's getting offered. It's more down to his family and what he wants to do, whether he wants to stay here or go home. One thing to mention, if we're rounding up the NRL coverage, is Belinda Sharp, who's set to be the first ever NRL female referee and first ever female referee to referee first grade game in the world.
Awesome.
Brilliant.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. She's been doing Intrust Super Cup games since, I think, about 5 years she's been doing them now. And she's on the touchline regularly, so the players all know who she is. And I think it'll be a really, really good really good thing for the game, and she's doing it on Thursday at Brisbane.
Don't care what people say, if she's good enough to do it, get her doing it.
Absolutely. Do I do this? I'm going to have to, because everyone else is talking about it. Blake Austin, yeah or nay?
Right, my opinion's changed. Quickly. On this. Yep. My opinion's changed.
Yep.
I was initially, no, dead set, no, I want English people playing for England. I am very, very, and I've been like that for, I hate the international rules that, for me, if you're Australian, you play for Australia. Yada, yada, yada. Then I watched the cricket on Sunday.
Yes.
And I'm not really a cricket fan. We were all in this office. If you wondered why League Express went out late, it was because we were all watching the cricket and we were all going mad. Archer from West Indies. Jason Roy, the hero of the semi-final, South African. One of my favourite ever cricketers watching, Kevin Peterson, South African.
Ben Stokes, New Zealand.
Ben Stokes. Owen Morgan, the captain from Ireland. Did anyone care? Did anyone even bring it up? No. So the bigger picture for me is the World Cup is what's huge for this sport. If England can win it on home soil, that's the sort of impact it can have for rugby league. So if Blake Austin or whoever else can help us win it, I don't really
The key for me is whether Austin identifies as an Englishman. I think everyone in that England cricket side identifies as an Englishman, even if they weren't born there. I think they all think, oh, I'm from England, I want to represent England. And Austin obviously does want to represent England, but I'm not sure whether he identifies as English, because he probably doesn't.
Well, that's going to rumble on, I think, that kind of debate. And you can have that on the Total RL forum, of course. But that's the end of this week's show. Bit of housekeeping just before we go. Any bits and pieces? Obviously, the magazines, there's deadlines and stuff like that. Articles are starting to fly in now, Matthew.
Other than mine.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm still waiting for some. It's still a bit early for me to be filing.
What we're looking at, though, for next week?
Well, the cover will be Saints-based, a current player and an ex-player. There's loads in there, really. I'm doing a trip report on Toronto, which I'm writing as we speak, so that'll probably get filed on Monday, probably.
We've got some mid-season awards.
Mid-season, yeah, we've done that. So
who wins best podcast? That's right.
We should actually... Yeah. Well, we can't really do that, can we, because it would be clear bias.
Doesn't mean it's not true.
I noticed that when you search Rugby League on Spotify,
yes,
Total Rugby League podcast comes up as number one.
I think it depends on the day of the week.
There was something else that came up when I searched Rugby League on Spotify, and it's the song Rugby League is Crap.
Wow.
And we listened to it and it was quite funny.
It's done by an Australian. There's clearly an AFL fan. It's good. Have a listen.
Yeah. League Express as well out on Monday, and Backchat too.
We have Keith Mason on, talk about rugby blood and his career. And we also have Paul Harrison from Bartley. They're obviously looking for a first trip to Wembley ever. And the other person was Phil Kaplan. So he was talking about the international game as well. League Express, he's just going to be busy. We're working on a few things. I can't really go into any further detail than that. There are certain things that may or may not make the paper depending on how far we get down.
And Alex, NRL coverage out on Monday as well.
Yeah, I think the big story is Belinda Sharp, so have a look for that.
Excellent. Well, Alex Davis, thank you very much for joining us. Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye bye.